Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
So last couple of days, I had some stuff that was bothering me, and I've been praying about it a lot. And I walked into work this morning, and a man that I know walked up to me, and he brought up the scripture I'm about to read to you, and it is, if you're interested, it is 1 Thessalonians 4, and I'm going to start in the second sentence of, or the final sentence of verse 10, and read through verse 12, and it says, "But we urge you, brothers and sisters, to excel even more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, and attend to your own business, and work with your hands, just as we instructed you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders, and not be in any need." And he walked up and he quoted that scripture to me. And then he asked me point blank, he said, "Do you think I'm doing that?" And it was just an interesting question. And we stood there and we talked about it. He's a young man. And so he asked me several questions about it. And we stood and we talked about it for several minutes, and it's just stuck with me all day, because now that he asked me, "Do you think I'm doing that?" I have been wondering all day, do I do that? Am I teaching my children that? Am I modeling that here at church? And as we as a congregation, are we doing that?
Read it again. Okay. Think about it.
All right. 1 Thessalonians 4. Starting second half of verse 10, "But we urge you, brothers and sisters, to excel even more." And this is where this came from. I'll give you a little bit more information. This young man is somebody that is, he's climbing the career ladder quickly, okay? But he is also somebody who's trying to live biblically. And it says, "But we urge you, brothers and sisters, to excel even more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands, just as we instructed you." And he actually stopped there. And then he said, "Do you think I'm doing that?" He said, "Do you think we can," and he asked me, he said, "Do you think we can do that in the business we're in and what we're trying to do and that sort of thing?" And just interestingly, we were going into a training class because he and I both want to advance in our company. And he asked me about that, and we stood and we talked about it a long time. And it's, for me today, it's really affected me. It's taken up a lot of my thought processes. And like I said, I don't know that there's any point to it, but it's been significant enough. I thought I'd bring it up to the class. And if there's any comments, we can do those, or we can jump right into Matthew 13.
Well, I'll bite.
Okay.
And this wasn't prepared or planned. This is a hard left turn, as he described it. So, well, I'm curious what you think that means, to live a quiet life, because my initial thoughts are the world today does not preach that, teach that, live that, in my opinion. I mean, we're all about being public, if you will.
That's honestly, and you know, y'all forgive us. This is a hard left turn. This is happening real time. So if I offend anybody, I apologize. I immediately went there. I'll tell you how I replied to the young man. So he's and this hurts what I'm about to say. He's 30, and that's pretty young. Now, when I was in my 20s,
like,
that was
looking
old.
At me when you say that.
It should hurt you more, is what I'm saying. He's 30. Now. And so he and I talked, and I'll tell you what I told him. I said, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, with regards to work, what was important to me, I think I focused on more on what I did. And I told him, now I really don't care what I do. It's more who I'm doing it with. And, you know, just again, to give you some background, I work in an environment that is very conducive to being a Christian. Okay, I work around mostly, if they're not Christians, they're at least people who are living, trying to live morally. There are several members here that I work with in close proximity to. So that's what I said to him about the immediate situation. And I said, I don't think necessarily wanting to advance in your career is in opposition to this. But that's how I answered him. But then as I sat and thought about it during the day today, I definitely think, you know, in society today, to your point, you know, what do we all do? We all want to go to Facebook. We want to post. We want to, you know, we want to be seen. And I've really kind of thought about that a lot today. So that's why I'm looking at you, because you asked the question.
So, when we have a variety of age distribution in this class tonight, and to me, it's an important topic. And those of us with children, grandchildren, or approaching that age, that should be on our hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Because young folks are really challenged, I think, by their peers and what the world advertising and is selling us.
Yeah. Any thoughts out there?
I thought of the word meekness, and I don't think being meek necessarily means like being quiet and reserved into yourself, because like we say it as a negative connotation, like, oh, they're an attention seeker. That person's an attention seeker. But everybody's an attention seeker. Like, whether you like it publicly, you need it from somebody special, you need it from, you know, your peers, your upper management or whatever, like everybody needs attention of some sort. So I think of meekness differently than the word quiet. And so that's what I thought of when I heard that verse was, and that's, you know, one of the fruits of the Spirit, not meekness, but lowliness.
Okay. Yeah.
I like connected with the work with your hands part. And I just think about Paul, how he could have asked the church to, like, you know, pay for his needs, but he built tents to support himself when he was, you know, doing mission work. And also just think about, you don't want to impose on anybody, because if you can work, you should work to support yourself. Because I have like family members who I have to like goad into working for them to support themselves. Otherwise, you know, like I have to do it or whatever. And I'm glad to do it, but I don't know. That's what I think about.
Yeah, I'll also tell you guys, I do not work with my hands. I have no skills that are worthwhile outside of modern society. And I thought about that a lot today. None. If we go to being a third world country, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll go to Robert's house. I'll go to Robert's house and hide in the shadow of his mustache, which is older than most of y'all. So, yes.
My grandfather, he passed away about 5 years ago, but I immediately thought of him when we were reading that. He was a pediatric cardiologist, and so, like, that's kind of a big deal, right? But he didn't really talk about it. He was super, very meek, very quiet, introverted. He was an elder at his church, but like all that I would ever see him do, he was the guy that flipped the slides on the PowerPoint, you know, like very humble in appearance. Their house was very modest in size and price, and his behavior in social settings was very meek. But at his funeral, there were people there who came and told the story of how he saved their life when he was a baby with his career, and how he converted them through World Bible School that he was involved with. And like all of these extraordinary stories that he never would have told on his own. And it's like he was living this extraordinary life, and he wasn't working. Well, he was working with his hands, but not in like in people's hearts, like in their body. It's a little different, but it's not that he took a pay cut or took this menial job or didn't find meaning in his life, but he chose actions that, I mean, he created generational wealth and all these different things, and like, he didn't need anybody to know that. And the only reason we know is because other people told us. So that's what that makes me think of.
Love your choice of words there. Mm-hmm. So much goodness in what you just said. I wanted to stop you when you said it's a big deal, and I was going to say, I'm betting where you're going, it wasn't a big deal to him, and then that's exactly what you said. Thank you for that. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's probably some context there that might help that you would interpret that. But, you know, our world today and with what, you know, the kind of work we do, you know, I think I think of it as, you know, the quiet part, not being self-promoting, but promoting others, you know, and trying to put the attention on others, good things they're doing. And, you know, the minding your own business. I mean, you know, don't be meddlesome. Don't be disruptive. You know, just maybe that sort of thing. Not that you just got to keep to yourself and not, you know.
Yeah. I think you're right.
And, you know, the work with your hands, I mean, you know, they're, I don't know if that, you know, we necessarily take that literally.
I get it. You have no skills either.
Yeah. That's exactly.
I'm just messing with you, okay? Sorry.
I know.
Okay. Any other thoughts, and then we'll...
Speaking of context, what are they to focus on when he says, I urge you? I mean, this is about brotherly love. They're to excel. They're to focus on that. Love does not promote itself. It promotes and first seeks the benefit of others, and then, yeah, don't forget to work for your own whatever, but that is the urging. Focus on the love and the quiet Christian living, the lifestyle, again, not promoting. Focus on love. Of course, agape love is the only love that is commanded because it is not natural. The other loves are natural. This is unnatural. So to me, that's focus first on that. It never seeks its own, doesn't promote it. That's what I've heard back there with the grandfather and everybody. I mean, that's what's been said. But focus on the love first.
Okay. Any other comments before we move on? Okay, I'm going to move on. I've got a couple things we want to hit in chapter 13. And we also said, and we may not get to chapter 14 next week. We did say, Robert and I were saying before class, if there's any topics that we covered that y'all want us to review next week, let us know. Come up, tell us, call, text, whatever. And we will try to cover those next week. So now I want to jump back over into Matthew chapter 13. And if you'll remember, last week I talked about, and I really wish Brandon was here because I think he had some thoughts about this as well, but I was talking about how when I read chapter 13, I kind of felt like there was a narrative all the way through, and then I've always thought it was kind of odd that when I looked at the parable of the mustard seed and the leaven, and then the pearl, or the hidden treasure and the pearl, it was kind of like, at least I guess in the way I had always read it, it's like those four parables in pairs of two, they say the same thing. That was I think I said that last week, and Bart jumped in and he said, no, I don't think that's the way it really is. And in particular, he was talking about the hidden treasure and the costly pearl. And what he pointed out is that, I'm going to read it, in verse 44 on the hidden treasure, it starts and it says, the kingdom of heaven is like what? Treasure. So what is the kingdom of heaven in that one? It's the treasure, okay? In the second one, It's the kingdom of heaven. What is the kingdom of heaven like in chapter 45? The kingdom of heaven is like what? The merchant. Is that the same thing? That's exactly right. So in the second one, the first one is what is he talking about? The kingdom of heaven is the treasure. And what do we have that happens? The man finds it and he gives up things and he buys, let's see, he gives up everything he has and he buys that field. Okay, so in that parable, and Larry's smiling, I think he already knows the end here. Y'all know, I call people out. You bet. This is like an auction. If you twitch, I'm calling on you. So the point is the kingdom of heaven, I'm sorry, I started joking and I shouldn't have done that. In the second one, the kingdom of heaven is the merchant. And what was the merchant doing? He's seeking, okay? So what's the application there? In the first one, I think the as I take away from it, we're the ones searching for the kingdom of heaven. When we find it, we give up everything we have to get it. But the second one, it's the kingdom of heaven, is looking for fine pearls. Well, what are the pearls? Us, right? And then the thing that I think that is beautiful about it is back to the narrative that I was talking about. What's he telling, you know, in the parable, what is he telling them? I'm going to give up everything for you. He's not asking anything of them that he's not willing to do. I will tell you, I looked at this all week. I don't know that my interpretation there is correct. It's different than I've ever looked at it before. And maybe that was my own just reading past it. And then, so after I looked at that, I looked back at the mustard seed and the leaven, and I'm not sure that I've quite got that one figured out, but again, it is not the same thing. So in the first one, the kingdom of heaven is the seed, and in the second one, the kingdom of heaven is the leaven. So again, not exactly sure what it means, but I definitely, the Matthew 13, the hidden treasure and the costly pearl, Bart's comments made me go back and completely reinterpret what those two things meant. Is that something y'all all knew and I'm just the silly one up here, or is this something new to any of y'all? I'm just curious.
One way I've heard it described before is that in the second one about the pearl, the merchant could be Jesus who gave his life
for
the kingdom.
Yes.
For the pearls that he's looking for.
Yes.
But once the kingdom is established, the kingdom is the body of Christ. And so we should be giving up to go out and look for pearls.
Yes. Any other thoughts there? No? Okay, I guess I was the only one that was confused on that. So anyway.
What's the takeaway from those two parables? What's the message that we're to get from those?
I think, and we talked about this a little bit last week, I think that in particular what I talked about is there's a cost. There's going to be a cost to be a part of the kingdom. And then, as I was talking about, that's when Bart brought up, and I think he's correct, that the second parable there is Jesus saying, I'm going to give up something too. That's the way I took it.
It's also saying that it's worth it.
Yes. Yep. And that's very true. Down toward the end there, I tried to bring out that point later on. That's the narrative. Is he says, you know, hey, you're gonna go sow for me. A lot of it's not gonna be successful, you know. And then he says, and then there's gonna be growth, and you're gonna want to get involved and separate the weeds from the good. And he says, that's not your job. And then he goes in, and so it's I look at Matthew 13 now as a almost like a roadmap of him saying, this is what it's going to be like, but he did it in parables. But I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, I think so. And Kenny kind of touched on what I was thinking, the value of the kingdom and its comparison to what we have here on earth. And it's worth everything yet we have to give here. Going back to what we see a lot in the world today, how many people lose the other for something so insignificant in this world.
Yeah. I was just thinking about a good illustration of this would be like the rich man that came to Jesus, and I feel like he was looking for the kingdom of heaven, but then when Jesus told him what he would have to give up, like his heart wasn't prepared. Like one of the seeds, the pride of life or whatever choked it out.
Right.
And I don't know if I'd be willing to sell everything I had to follow Jesus, So, that's what I think about.
Okay.
That's a good and honest comment. I think we can all be a little introspective there and evaluate how much we're willing to give up and what's really expected of us. Okay.
This is going to sound really crazy. I've kind of learned to enjoy going to funerals of Christians. Because what you hear is what those people have done. We're not persecuted today, yet. But Jesus asks us to give up everything. So in our life, what are we doing so that when it's our funeral, somebody can say, like you said about your granddad or whoever, this is what he did. And, we each have to, have different gifts and different things to do, but we all need to be putting that on the line for Jesus, however that occurs in our life.
Right. Which can come and appear in many ways. Sort of what we leave here, we can't take anything with us. But we see in the comments today that something left a mark, touched a heart, and a lot of others, literally. I was out last week, so I'm not sure.
We have landed. Spent like 3 weeks now on chapter 13, so we can move into 14 if you'd like.
Or do we? It's already after 7:30.
Yeah.
Chapter 14 takes a little different path. Why don't we just back up and do a little review on 13? Just what was chapter 13, the hows and the whys.
Sure.
And this is as much to help. Studying it week to week is helping me, and studying the same chapter for 2 or 3 weeks is helping me, and I think will help me in the months to come. Things will come to mind. So I ask you guys, what is chapter 13 about? I mean, I've seen a lot of you in here week in, week out, and I'm thankful for that. Glad you're here. Not a trick question. Just, what do you remember about the last few weeks?
Parables.
It's parable rich, right? Chapter 13 is 7 or 8 parables back to back, and some similar, slightly different. Anybody see anything else that stands out about chapter 13?
So all the parables require action. By someone. So I think that is a good demonstration that maybe it was this class, I don't know, we had a discussion about faith and works. So I think it shows that we have to be people of action, that we just can't sit by.
You got an example of one of them of that?
It's David. Okay. So if you look, I mean, look at verse. Look at verse 3. It says a farmer went out to sow his seed, right? So if you go through that, there's different types of seed. I mean, every single, I'm going to say every single parable shows somebody doing something.
I'm thinking through them in my head. I agree.
I think based on the pearl of great value, Jesus being that merchant, he sees all of us as fine pearls, and it's up to us to accept what he's offering. But he made that sacrifice for each of us because we're all worthy of great value.
Good.
I think about the idea of what maybe I want my life to be like. We kind of touched earlier on what leading a humble life maybe looks like. And I think there's two parts of it. It's like, what does my life look like? And then how am I going to be that sober? Well, we talked about last week about, you know, there should be some amount of sacrifice that's involved with the life that we choose to live. So where does that come in? I know for me, you know, I had a career change where I left my engineering job to go do this, you know, crazy thing, be a freelance filmmaker. And for me, that was really listening to God saying, hey, this is something that I've given to you. What are you going to do with it? Am I going to live in fear and, you know, stay comfortable, or am I gonna, you know, sacrifice something? There's an element of comfortability of sacrificing in order to actually do what God is asking of me. So I think it's, at least for me, when I look at that, it's two things. What am I willing to do in my own life to, you know, align my own will with what God has for me, but also what am I doing through that to be that, you know, merchant in a sense? Because I think Brandon mentioned this, like our passion sometimes is connected to our ministry. When we fully align with what God has designed us to do, there's a ministry there that will allow us to connect and reach people. But that takes humility, that takes putting aside what we want for ourselves and aligning with what God has for us. So it's all in line with the laying aside of self and, you know, taking on what God has for us.
And if I may, I think you had to be still and be quiet to realize what your dream is and what it costs to go do it and make that decision. So,
yeah, and I think that's where God wants us. Like, I realized we had a class in our CYP group where I think Richard, he posed the question, how often are we putting ourselves in situations where we have to trust in God? It's very easy for us to, you know, have a really nice cushy job that pays well and we have all of our necessities taken care of. But if we're only operating in a mode of, I know I can do this, and it's never, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but God, I trust you to make it happen. Then you don't, that limits the relationship, I think, that you can have with God. So.
Yeah. And I know you've used this career to teach, preach, reach. You've used it for God. So, Robert.
Well, verse 11 says, they talk about why you're speaking in parables. He says, because the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given for you to know, but it's not been given for them. And it's interesting, he's talking about the kingdom of heaven. He doesn't say anything about it's going to be this ethereal place, and let me tell you what it's going to look like, and all this stuff. He talks about just what Brian said. Really simple English and simple stories about what we are doing right here or should be doing right here. So it really is about the action. It's like Brian mentioned, and it's about right here. It's not about something way out there in space, some mystical thing. It's about things we understand about, but it is about what we should be doing. And it's a simple lesson, but it's about the kingdom of heaven. It's the secrets of heaven, and it's not really complicated. It's just very important and very difficult.
So you're touching on what I was thinking toward a next question, is why parables? We say chapter 13, when we think of it now, we think, that's the chapter filled with parables. And all those parables drive us to some action. Got to be doing as part of these parables. But why parables? Why would he fill a whole chapter full of parables? He, Matthew.
He always would say, like, if you have ears to hear, let them hear. It's like to make people listen closely.
Okay.
Put some effort into it.
What did we say a parable was? I hear.
Yeah. You can put a basic earthly story with a heavenly meaning. I mean, okay. They could relate to those things.
Yeah.
They could see them. They could relate to the things that he talked about.
Remember that true definition that's not really limiting was to lay alongside in the literal sense? And why do we lay it alongside? For comparison purposes, to help us understand. Wow. And relate. So we also talked about, it's been 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, it has. We've been about 3 weeks.
Are parables effective? Are they an effective means of teaching and reaching people? And how so? You remember what we've talked about related to that?
I think for the people that didn't understand, it's kind of like what the guy talked to you this morning, you thought on it all day long.
Yeah.
When you don't get it the first time, it makes you kind of ponder it and think, well, what does that mean? And you may run through a series of emotions, you know, well, that makes me mad. I should, you know, I should have got that. Or, you know, it's just easier for you to think about it and come to your own decisions than someone pointing their finger at you and saying.
I want to jump in there with what you just said. I thought about this. As you're saying this, I thought about it today. If he had come up to me and he had said, you know, you need to live a quiet life, I'd have been like, hey, thanks. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Right? And you're not going to think about it, but it was this out of left field, right? This guy that I have daily interaction with. Not bad interaction. I'm not saying that. But we, you know, if we're talking about something, it's typically we talk about return on sales and present value of future dollars, you know, that kind of stuff. And that wasn't what we talked about. He asked me a question, which goes back to something that we've talked about in here before. And it just, I mean, this occupied a lot of my thought today. And I think, we didn't plan this, but I think this goes to the point that Robert's trying to make here is sometimes, you know, the direct path is not the one that's going to be the most effective, you know, trying to get people to think or reflect.
And while we're on that, I've had comments from at least a couple of teachers, and I don't remember who. Was it, were you one of them?
Yeah.
You mind sharing what are taught to teach and how?
Yes, so in school we are taught to be an effective teacher. We cannot tell them the answer. You have to lead them to it through questioning. So. Asking questions is going, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to learn anything if you were telling them what to do.
Yeah. So she said, we're getting some this in the back row. She said that as a teacher, you're taught that you don't give answers. You lead the student to the correct answer by questioning. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
I think about when David was approached with his sin, he was not told you did wrong.
Yep.
A story was shared with him and forced him to examine himself. So even these that we've been reading, it's like you read something about someone, whether this person was real or not, and it forces you to, you know, empathize at some level with what they're doing in the story. And it makes you look internally. It's like, where am I in comparison to them? Jesus was really good at using those to force us into that.
Good.
So we've got about 45 seconds left, I think. Just wanted to thank y'all again. I needed this class tonight. Amanda told me that this morning. She said, hey, you get to teach your class tonight. I enjoy it. I'm going to tell you something else that she has pointed out about this class. As I look around the room, I think we probably have every connect group represented in here. And I've never been in a class where every comment, every question, everything we do stays on point. And you all are to be commended for that. So that'll be the last thing I'll say tonight. Thank you all.
Any other comments or questions on chapter 13?
I have a question. It's okay if it doesn't get answered right now. Since so much of Christ's ministry is happening during the Roman oppression of the Jewish people, who are obviously looking for a physical kingdom in a lot of senses, and here's this powerful man that they're all clinging to and probably developing some kind of expectation of what his kingdom is supposed to be, how do you feel like that plays into him breaking down the kingdom of heaven is the king, specifically calling it the kingdom, but then kind of flipping it and almost probably raising a question to her, what do you mean the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed? That's not what they had pictured. So I'm just curious if that context plays into any of that at all.
I think it does. And we won't spend too much time trying to answer it, but we talked about tonight.
Come back.
Why start chapter 14 next week? It's the last week. But, we studied early in Matthew about he had a target audience to begin with. In fact, he gave the disciples specific direction of who to focus on, and then that changed. And we see when he tells in chapter 13 why he's teaching in parables, he touches on the mysteries and things. So to some, they would be. And we see in other New Testament scripture, what's foolishness to who? So I think so. There's two different ways you could receive that. A kingdom is a mustard seed. But it leaves you thinking, right? Like Julie said, it doesn't make sense on the surface, but when I break it down to and I lay it beside what I'm living today, what I know, whether it's a seed, that's another observation. He started off the kingdom of heaven compared to small things. And he wrapped up the chapter with the tremendous value, of the pearls and the prizes. So that's a good observation. Everybody think about that this week. We may talk about that some more next week. Thanks for giving us a subject. Thanks for being here. Sorry we didn't get it to 14, but you may have to come next fall to hear about chapter 14.